Well, never a dull moment here at WHPC 90.3, the voice of Nassau Community College. I'm Tom Ryan, my Love Your Life and co-host here as well. Glad to see Heidi Morales, Ryan, I should at least say your name. And ready to bring you another hour of music. We're here every Wednesday and Friday between 5 and 6 p.m. Fridays, the How Music Changed portion of our program is, we dedicate Fridays to this, and we pick a topic and we get as in-depth as we possibly can to look at what we consider to be some of the most important artists or labels. Basically, how can I tear apart the entire history of recorded music from the beginning to the present and try to discuss all of it within 250 topics? That's our goal. A bit difficult.
Good to have goals.
Yeah, at least we have goals. That's what we're trying to do here. Of course, we have it with a very heavy presence based upon rock and roll, because I think that that's more or less very important to the contemporary history that most people are interested in, and also American music. In this instance, we have one out of the two anyway. We've been concentrating on the music of the Kinks, and this is show number 9. And I'm enjoying this series immensely. I've been enjoying a lot of the series lately immensely. But I'm a latecomer to the Kinks as far as being a full-blooded fan, total dedicated follower of the band, so to speak.
coin a phrase.
Exactly. But very glad to have come to know them as well as I have in the past 10 or 15 years. And this series is basically breaking down a lot for me in terms of how things developed for the band, the chronology of their music. And where we're at right now is late 65, early 66, where Ray starts to develop incredibly, some crazy mathematical proportion of genius begins to come over him as far as being a songwriter. And yet, he's so unhappy. I didn't know this about it. When you listen to the music, it just doesn't seem like that would be the case. But it seems as though, the little-known history of the band betrays them as this highly dysfunctional outfit that still somehow manages to make the seemingly endless stream of incredible music. With each hit song, Davies seems to get more and more suspicious of his business partners. Ray Davies, the songwriter.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
There's two of them.
Right, exactly. Yeah, Dave is still having fun. To the point where Ray ends up in the middle of a legal nightmare around this point in time, and that starts to lead him into a state of deep depression. The music seems to be his only means of escape, with the rock and roll lifestyle providing occasional moments of totally outrageous weirdness. We're going to let Ray explain this part of his career for the following show. Mostly we'll be talking from Ray's own words. But we're going to start with his brother Dave as we read excerpts from Dave Davies' autobiography called Kink and Ray's unauthorized autobiography called X-Ray. As I said, though, we're going to give the first word to Dave. After the success of A Well-Respected Man, which is a song that we played last week, Ray came up with another jam in a similar vein called Dedicated Follower of Fashion. This also gave us further opportunity to camp it up in public, especially at photo shoots or on TV. My mate Quinn was eager to help furnish me with whatever outrageous clothes he could get a hold of. The sillier, the better. After a couple of unsuccessful attempts to record Dedicated Follower, we finally arrived at a version that we liked. It had a grating, brash, tinny sound with a more open and changy electric guitar intro, which sounded great on the radio. The earlier version sounded more ordinary, more folky. This time, Pi plucked up the courage to release Dedicated as a single, and it became a hit. Well, interestingly, I do have a recording of the Kinks working on this song in the studio, so you can actually hear them at work for about 7 minutes as they try to refine this song. Here they are working on Dedicated Follower of Fashion.
Okay, man. Follower of Fashion, one.
Don't forget, fellas, go that. Vroom, ba, 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 yeah. Come on, why don't you wait till we start second verse? Down, down, bam. Yeah, try that. Let's try that anyway. One, 1, 2, 3, 4. They seek him here, they seek him there. His clothes are loud, but never square. It will make or break him, so he's got to buy the best, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fashion. And when he does his little round, now the boots.
Yeah, I think it sounds better a bit slower.
Well, it was swinging before, right?
Was it? All right.
Two.
This time in the morning. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
They seek him here, they seek him there. His clothes are loud, but never square. It won't make or break him, so he's got to buy the best, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fashion. And when he does his little round, round the boutiques of London town, eagerly pursuing all the latest fads and trends, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fashion. Oh yes he is, oh yes he is. He thinks he is a flower to be looked at, and when he pulls his frilly nylon panties right up tight, he feels a dedicated follower of fashion. Oh yes he is, oh yes he is. There's one thing that he loves, and that is flattery. One week he's in polka dots, the next week he's in stripes, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fashion. They seek him here, they seek him there, in Regent Street and Leicester Square. Everywhere the Carnavician army marches on, each one a dedicated follower of fashion. Oh yes he is, oh yes he is. World is built round discotheques and parties. This pleasure-seeking individual always looks his best, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fashion. Oh yes he is, oh yes he is. Shell,
yeah.
Can we just hear that back to see how it sounded?
Alright, okay.
Sorry, I told you to come in tomorrow.
Here we go.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. They seek him here, they seek him there. His clothes are loud, but never square. It will make or break him, so he's got to buy the best, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fashion. And when he does his little round, round the boutiques of London town, eagerly pursuing all the latest fads and trends, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fashion. Oh yes he is, oh yes he is. Thinks he is a flower to be looked at, and when he pulls his frilly nylon and his right up tight, he feels a dedicated follower of fashion. yes he is. Oh, yes he is. There's one thing that he loves, and that is flattery. One week he's in polka dots, the next week he's in stripes, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fashion. They seek him here, they seek him there, in Regent Street and Leicester Square. Everywhere the Carnavician army marches on, each one a dedicated follower of fashion. Oh yes he is. Oh yes he is. His world is built round discotheques and parties. His pleasure-seeking individual always looks his best, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of that. Oh yes he is. Oh yes he is. He flits from shop to shop just like a butterfly. Matters of the cloth, he is as fickle as can be, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fashion. He's a dedicated follower of fashion. He's a dedicated follower of fashion.
Yes, they did it. Oh, I love that. You get to hear them working in the studio. And I will play the actual song. But before we do, I want you to hear what's going on in Ray's mind around this time. With a dedicated follower of fashion such a hit, people started coming up to me in the street and singing the chorus in my face. Oh, yes, he is. Oh, yes, he is. As if to say that I knew who I was. Unfortunately, my inner and somewhat distorted sense of reality told me that this was not who I wanted to be. I didn't know who I was. I didn't care that everyone loved the song or that it was being quoted on television and in the tabloids as a comment on the Times. I saw myself on Top of the Pops and tried to throw the television out of the kitchen window. In the end, I compromised with my concerned relatives and put the television in the gas oven. The cord was still attached to the wall, and through the glass in the oven, I was still performing. Oh, yes, he is. Oh, yes, he is. After that, I declared that I was going to bed and woke up a week later with a mustache and beard. The mustache drooped and made me look like a Mexican peasant. I tried to go for a quiet walk. They seek him here. They seek him there. I went back to all my schoolboy haunts, the playing fields, the alleyways, the broken fences, and none of it seemed to have changed. The only difference was me. I rushed home and got straight on the telephone to my publicist, who was already angry at me for not behaving like a star, and, most of all, like a man. I shouted down the telephone that I had no intention of giving the press access to my sickbed. This anger turned to total disgust when I announced that I wanted to give up showbiz and return to being a schoolboy. Oh, yes, he is. Oh, yes, he is. The man living the life does not sound like the man singing the song.
Not at all.
Here's the hit recording of that exact song.
They seek him here. They seek him there. His clothes are loud, but never square. It will make or break him, so he's got to buy the best, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fashion. And when he does his little rounds round the boutiques of London town, pursuing all the latest fads and trends, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fashion. Oh yes he is.
Oh yes he is.
Oh yes he is.
Oh yes he is.
He thinks he is a flower to be looked at, and when he pulls his frilly nylon and his raked up tight, he feels a
dedicated follower of fashion. Oh yes he is.
Oh yes he is.
Oh yes he is.
Oh yes he is.
There's one thing that he loves, and that is flattery. One week he's in polka dots, the next week he's in stripes, but he's a dedicated follower of fashion. They seek him here, they seek him there, in Regent Street and Leicester Square. Everywhere the Carnavician army marches on, each one a dedicated follower of fashion. Oh yes he is.
Oh yes he is.
Oh yes he is.
Oh yes he is.
His world is built round discotheques and parties. His pleasure-seeking individual always looks his best, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fashion. Oh yes he is.
Oh yes he is.
Oh yes he is.
Oh yes he is.
He flits from shop to shop just like a butterfly. In matters of the cloth he is as fickle as can be, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fashion. He's a dedicated follower of fashion.
As funny as Ray is on that song, because his delivery is hysterical, you know, basically playing up the campiness of it all. But I believe that it's a not very well disguised him critiquing his own management, his managers, who Ray is a very frugal. I don't know if he still is, but back then he certainly was a frugal individual. That was his reputation. And he more or less had to be, because all of his money was being tied up because of lawsuits. But in the meanwhile, he's looking at his management buying Rolls Royces and spending tons of money on clothes and living in high society. And I'm sure that it was a little bit odd. It had to bother him to think.
In some songs, didn't he actually just outright name his management, call them out in songs?
Absolutely. If on the Lola album, you'll hear him basically dropping their names. And when we get up to it, you'll hear him basically talking about this. It stayed with him for a while. But it's
he tried
hard
to be subtle at first.
Yes. You know, at this point in time, I mean, people just weren't aware of it. But it stayed with him for about 5 years at least. Now, going back to Dave Davies' comments, he'll talk about the B-side of that single. On the B-side was a song that was virtually written and thrown together in the studio called Sitting on My Sofa. I came up with a line, a riff or two, and a series of chord changes, and Ray embellished them and wrote a song based on them. Ray took all the writing credit. It didn't bother me at the time. After all, it was family. And we were enjoying phenomenal success. The adulation we received seemed more than enough for me. I never thought about the fact that the publishing rights would be so valuable or even cared about it. In fact, I never thought much about money at all, unlike Ray, who has to be one of the most thrifty people I've ever known. That's Dave talking about his brother. Here's that B-side, Sitting on My Sofa.
Sitting on my sofa.
A rockin' B-side to Dedicated Follower of Fashion. Now back to Ray and his deteriorating state of mind. I rolled up all the money I had on me into a bundle and stuffed it into my socks. I then proceeded to run all the way from my house in East Finchley down to Somerville's office in Denmark Street in the West End, a distance of about 6 miles. Upon seeing me burst in, Somerville took cover behind his desk. I threw a punch and missed. He ducked, and in doing so, accidentally banged his rather large chin on a chair. He made a frantic phone call to the police, saying he had been attacked by a madman and was under siege in his office. What followed was a Keystone Cop-style chase around the small alleyways surrounding Denmark Street. The police would run past a doorway, and I would emerge from the same doorway and run in the opposite direction. I ended up in Eddie Kastner's office, which was just a few buildings away. I must have been insane to go in there, but there was a part of me that genuinely wanted to make peace. I didn't want to hate anybody. When I was ran in and gave the receptionist a kiss, it was obvious to her that I was a little emotionally unstable. But she immediately told her boss that I was there, and I was ushered into the lion's den. Kastner hugged me as if I was the prodigal son returning. His accountant, David Dane, brought me a cup of tea. I said I couldn't understand why they were doing this to me. They were suing him. Kastner said that equally he couldn't understand why I had left to join Freddie Beanstalk's company. David Dane said that surely I must have known that by signing with Belinda Music, I would instantly be in dispute with Kastner. Soon, before I got into a more compromising situation, Robert arrived like a knight in shining armor. He was accompanied by a doctor who wrote a medical certificate which explained my eccentric behavior to the police. After they were satisfied by the doctor that I was acting under extreme stress, they allowed me to return home, provided I remained under the doctor's care. The doctor dropped me off at my house and explained to my wife and manager that I should rest as much as possible and avoid all public engagements. He politely described my illness as nervous exhaustion caused by a physical breakdown and recommended that I visit him at his clinic as soon as I was able. The Kinks had gone on tour without me, with a replacement to sing my parts. Everybody refers to that period as the first time RD broke down, when in fact it was just one of a series of mind overloads. But this was the first time anybody else had been affected by it. Back to Dave Davies and his perspective on this. Grenville had booked some dates in Belgium that he claimed we couldn't get out of, so he got Mick Grace from a local band called the Cockneys to fill in for Ray. We had never toured there before, so we thought we'd get away with it since Belgians had only seen pictures of the Kinks on album covers. I think Robert and Grenville were worried about Ray's long-term health. We rehearsed with Grace, and it seemed all right, so I agreed to the tour. But it turned out to be a disaster. Grace looked a bit like Ray, and as it turned out, he was a manic depressive, so they had a lot more in common than I first thought. It was a miserable time and a bad move by our management. But there were some lighter moments, like one show near the French border. As I knelt down in front of the audience to do a solo, I saw a guy with an extremely perplexed expression on his face. He was staring ferociously at Mick Grace. After some thought, he turned to me and said in broken English, "Hey, Dave, he not Ray." He wandered out of the building, shaking his head in disbelief. I was laughing so hard that I could barely sing after that. Back to Ray. After the incident of attacking my own manager, I stopped doing any interviews and saw very few people. In the music press, they were saying that I had become a recluse, and there were even rumors that I had left the group. But the break allowed me time to stay at home and write songs, some of which were therapeutic, others for the next Kinks album. The sunny days of early spring 1966 consisted of getting up, writing a song, playing with my daughter, lunch in the back garden, the afternoon resting in a dark room, then back in the sun, more songwriting, and bed. Bliss. Oh, yes, it is. Oh, yes, it is. Here's two rare songs from that period, perhaps some of the songs Ray was talking about that he had been writing that didn't make it onto the albums. We'll hear "And I Will Love You," followed by "All Night Stand."
I know a place not far away where the sun always shines. You will be mine, and I love you. I know a place where the sun always shines. Bells will chime, and they will know you are mine. All of the time, I will love you. Church bells will chime, so they know you are mine. All of the time, I will.
Listen to the words of that song. It's so obvious now to hear that how Ray is just obsessed with what is happening and the money, 10% for this and that, and get these people off my back. It's incredible. And that song is called All Night Stand, which is interesting because last week we played part of an interview with Pete Quaife, the bass player, and he mentioned that there might be like a film based around a song that Ray was writing called All Night Stand. I guess that never came to fruition at all. In fact, it never even ended up on an album, but there's a very interesting demo recording of that song right there. And we just got a phone call from a listener, and I got to share this with everybody because this cracks me up, and it's fascinating, and it humbles me in a bit, in a sense. Big fan of the show, been listening, and obviously a very big Kinks fan, so this show obviously appeals to him. He mentioned that, you know, while I was listening to every single show, he has a friend who's also a very big Kinks fan who moved further out east, past the ability where our station broadcasts. So to share the show with his friend, he basically calls him up on the telephone and keeps the phone near the speaker to play the show. Now, as awesome as I think that that is,
there's an easier way.
There is definitely an easier way to do this. We have a website. It's called AmericanHitNetwork.com. It's very easy. Every show that we do, every show that we've done for years now, really, is or will be loaded up onto that show. All of the most recent shows certainly are there. If you're a fan of the Kinks and if you wanted to hear all nine shows, all you've got to do is go to AmericanHitNetwork.com, and you're going to see four channels right there in front of you. One of them is our Wednesday show. Another one is this very show, the Friday show, How Music Changed. And the shows are all there, going from the newest to the oldest. So if you click on it, you see more shows, and they'll all pop up. And you can play any show you want to, whenever you want to, and you can hear it in full computer fidelity, which I'm sure is at least going, if not perfect, should be a little bit better than what you get over the phone line with Ma Bell. So thanks for that phone call. Thank you so much for the kind words, and I hope that this helps you in particular. And
it doesn't help their friendship, though.
Maybe not. Yeah, maybe it's cool to be on the phone anyway. But really, thanks for that bit of information. Now, I want to get back to Ray's frame of mind. Again, his continually deteriorating just frame of mind. A dedicated follower of fashion was just beginning to move slowly down the hit parade when a delegation consisting of Robert Grenville and, to give them emotional clout, my brother Dave, all arrived on my doorstep. They said that unless we went into the studio and made another single and album, any impetus that the last single had given us would be lost. I said I had several ideas, but nothing as good as the last record, that I was not ready, both physically and mentally, and that I wanted to leave the group and become a painter. A week later, I was in the studio recording tracks for a new album. I had few ideas left over from the American tour on the previous summer. Songs like Holiday in Waikiki, House in the Country, Party Line, along with more recent ideas, such as A Most Exclusive Residence for Sale, A Rainy Day in June, and a strange ballad called End of the Season. Let's hear those tunes that Ray mentions left over from the U.S. tour. That would be Holiday in Waikiki. We'll follow that with House in the Country and Party Line.
I wanna 'cause he's got a house in the country and a big sports car. He's got a house in the country and a big sports car, but he ain't got a home. Oh no, and he's as wicked as he can be, 'cause he's got a house in the country where he likes to spend his weekend day.
Hello, who's that speaking, please?
Is she a she at all? Who's
hearing three songs there that were all featured on the Kinks' next upcoming album at this time called Face to Face, Holiday in Waikiki, A House in the Country, and the song that opened the album called Party Line. Dave makes a comment about that song. He says, Party Line was a song I wrote in Pete's hotel bedroom one night after a show. We were trying to call our Danish girlfriends and got snagged up with wrong numbers and operators' errors. Ray helped me with a few lyrics in the studio, and there we had it, complete with Grenville's posh voice at the beginning. So that is their manager with that line. Okay, then letting Ray again tell the story about preparing songs for the album Face to Face. All these songs seem to be influenced by my current circumstances. Songs about a man who had become wealthy and, after traveling the world for the first time, returned home to buy a house and settle down. It was a character that was outside my experience and background, but the only way I could interpret how I felt was through a dusty, fallen aristocrat who had come from old money, as opposed to the wealth which I had made for myself. Here's a couple of those tracks, then, that might refer to what he's talking about. We'll hear Most Exclusive Residence for Sale and Rainy Day in June.
Set up. Faded in the gloom.
its mighty wings and pounced upon its prey. And all the skies so brilliant blue turned suddenly to gray. The cherished things are perishing and buried in their tomb. There is no hope, no reasoning this rainy day in June. Everybody felt the rain. Everybody felt the rain. Stretched its wrinkled hand and snatched a butterfly. The elves and gnomes were hunched in fear, too terrified to cry. The reckoning was beckoning their living to their doom. There was no hope, no reasoning this rainy day in June. Everybody felt the rain. Everybody felt the rain.
So there you have it, rainy day in June. So to end our show, we'll move from the rain into the sunshine. Ray will get us there, reading from his autobiography. During my recovery, I listened to a lot of old Frank Sinatra records sent to me by Reprise. I had also bought a book on arranging by Glenn Miller, and I had started writing a song on my recently acquired upright piano. I called it "The Taxman's Taken All My Dough." It was meant to be a topical song about the new taxes the Labor government was bringing in to relieve the wealthy of all their hard-earned cash. Again, it was my imaginary character singing through me, just as he was in all my other new songs. As this was my first year of being a success, I could sympathize with the sad, decadent character I had invented. I was brought up believing that all conservatives were cruel slave drivers who took advantage of the poor and cared little for the unfortunates on whom their whole financial empire had been built. Here was I, newly rich, on paper, singing about the woes of having money taken away from me by a labor government. To take the curse off of this aspect of what was otherwise a good song, I turned the narrator into a scoundrel who fought with his girlfriend after a night of drunkenness and cruelty. I also kept repeating "in the summertime" over the chorus to make the song more seasonal. By the time it came to make the record, I was back doing dates with the group, and for the time being, my retirement plans had been scrapped. We recorded Sunday Afternoon on Friday, May 13th, 1966. The Four Kinks plus Nicky Hopkins on piano put a backtrack down in three or four takes, and I sang the lead vocal in one pass. I had bad hay fever and could not have managed to sing it twice. We had just finished putting on the backup vocals when I noticed that Pete, our bass player, had played some wrong notes in the last few bars. I wanted to record the track again because we had no way of separating the bass from the rest of the instruments. The whole group looked shocked as I suggested this to Shel Talmy. He refused point blank. "Nobody will notice. It's just a fluff on the bass." I pointed out to Shel that my voice sounded wobbly, but Shell was in no mood for an argument. I reluctantly let him get on with the last overdub on the record, which was a melodica solo by Nicky Hopkins. This gave the track a good time music hall feel, and I soon forgot about the mistake on the bass. The record had taken about 3 hours to make, and a decision was made by the record company later that day to bring out the single by the second week in June to take advantage of the hot summer which was forecast. We'll leave you with that hit, and I hope you can join us again, of course, and we will be back next week to continue with our Kink Story Part 10. But we get to leave you with a hit, "Sunny Afternoon."
sunny afternoon, and I can't sail my yacht. He's taken everything I got. All I've got's this sunny afternoon. Save me from this squeeze. I got a big fat mama trying to break me. And I love to live so pleasantly. Live this life of luxury. Lazing on a sunny afternoon. In the summertime, in the summertime. My girlfriend's run up with my car and gone back to her mom park, telling tales of drunkenness and cruelty. Now I'm sitting here sipping at my ice cold beer, blazing on the sunny afternoon. Help me, help me, help me sail away. Well, give me two good reasons why I ought to stay. Cause I love to live so pleasantly. Live this life of luxury. Blazing on a sunny afternoon. In the summertime. In the summertime. In the summertime. Ah, oh, save me, save me, save me from this squeeze. I got a big fat mama trying. So pleasantly.